When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Good morning, pilgrims.
Oh, that's me. Who are you, Samoset or Squanto or something? Oh,
I don't know.
The new OK Boomers. OK Pilgrim.
Just greet every white person you see this week with, okay, Pilgrim.
Okay, Pilgrim.
Would you like to see our Thanksgiving specials? No, Meredith. Anyway, it's Thanksgiving week, which matters to only our American listeners.
That's exactly right. It's offensive to most other people, rightfully.
I'm not even in America at the moment.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah.
This comes out or right now?
Yeah. I'm in...
Which gulag have we finally sent you to?
I'm in Montreal.
Oh, that's one of the lovelier places.
Yeah.
They don't celebrate Thanksgiving.
They do celebrate Thanksgiving in Canada, but in October.
It's a different day, isn't it? Okay.
Yes, I guess they were.
They're too busy prepping for Boxing Day, whatever the heck they do.
I think that
Canadian
is
Thanksgiving.
What?
Wait, is Boxing Day also
no,
a Canadian
it's Canada.
Holiday?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Which,
their Thanksgiving is also different because they're Canadian, so it's sincere.
Mm-hmm. I only think Boxing Day is a Chinese holiday because that's when Spike killed a Chinese vampire on Buffy. And I believe
on
it was
Boxing Day.
And as you know, that's a historical drama. So,
well, yes, it is one of the folios.
Right, yeah.
No, I'm very happy to be in Montreal, French Canada.
Oh, that's how Canada. They pronounce it. Canada hyphen da.
This is us doing another holiday spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a mailbag.
Which I had to Google, shamefully, without asking you guys.
Really?
Are you too young to know what mail is, Aida?
I was like, what's a bag? You just show up.
Secure the mailbag.
There we go. See, now it's clicking.
And a little later, we'll be talking to Lizzie Kaplan.
I'm always curious what people are curious about. Like, I think we're pretty transparent, guileless folk. And yet, still, here come the queries.
You love the word guileless.
I know. Unfortunately, there's no other word for it. So I have to keep saying it. It's like when the word douchebag entered the vernacular. Like, there's no other word for that type of person. Like, you kind of just have to say douchebag. Like, it's not exactly tool. It's not exactly asshole. You know what I mean? Douchebag.
Yeah, I remember the Black Eyed Peas song, Let's Get Douchebag.
That's right.
Here.
Yeah.
Anyway, why don't we dive into some of these questions from the listeners, the people, the pilgrims. My question is on theme with Thanksgiving, says Hillary.
One L, though. Like Hillary from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah, Hillary Banks. Hillary the Banks.
Legend.
This is not her, I assume.
Okay.
It could be Hillary Duff.
True.
Yeah.
Or Swank.
Yes.
Oh. I hope it's one of you three.
Two Oscars, one question.
Obviously, there are a lot of holiday specials out there from TV shows and movies past and present. What are y'all's favorite Thanksgiving-themed movies or episodes, and why? Mine is a tie between Will and Grace's Movable Feast episode and Adam's Family Values' Thanksgiving pageant when Wednesday leads the rebellion against all the WASP kids and, of course, her fierce Pocahontas monologue.
Well, goddammit, they took mine. I
mean, I know,
right? Adam's Family Values is just, I'm sure it's come up several thousand times in this podcast, but timelessly, not just funny, but there's such a sour edge to that movie, and it really holds up. Again, if casting could get an Oscar, the casting for that movie should win not just that, the Nobel, whatever, the Peabody, whatever we have left over.
I don't support Will and Grace's Movable Feast just because I don't like the book Movable Feast by Ernest Hemingway.
They're the same thing.
The same thing.
I would say that. And then also, I grew up with Peanuts specials, as in Charlie Brown and all those people. And they had a series of TV movies that were educational in the 80s where they would go back in time and you would learn about the Constitution or the Wright brothers or something like that. Yeah. And there's a Thanksgiving one where you learn all about these names that I know about, Squanto and Samoset, and how they learned about Maze. Anyway, it's a very whitewashed reading of Thanksgiving, but it was cute at the time. And Lucy Van Pelt, Queen of Queens.
Isn't that the one where they famously have Franklin, like, sitting at some other table?
I don't know if it's quite that obvious. Yeah,
I think you're right, though.
Yeah.
I do think you're right, that, like, it's, like, the, not even, it's not
they
acknowledged.
They truly do him dirty the entire
It's like
series.
A Scorsese pan. Like, you don't actually, they don't focus on it. They're just like, this is part of the narrative. Make sure you take this in.
Franklin is the rat that scurries across the wall in The Departed.
My God.
I would say a Buffy reference again, my favorite historical drama.
Right.
Their Thanksgiving episode, Pings, is a very good episode. It is, they are doing construction on this new museum in Sunnydale, and it accidentally awakens a Chumash Indian spirit who wants to kill all of them.
Mm. I wonder if I'll ever watch Buffy. Again, anything in the paranormal, I fall asleep. I told you my story with Jessica Jones. I started watching and I was like, oh, she has dark hair and seems kind of mean. I'm into it. And then she could move a car. I'm like, well, no, I don't care.
Anything paranormal?
Most of the time.
Did you fall asleep during The Others?
That's as close as I get, but that's, again, about, you know, a shivering woman. So I'm in.
What about old Casper animations?
Casper?
Like, spooky. Oh, you pass out?
Oh, sure. I think I saw that movie in the theater, too, the Christina Ricci version. So it's embedded in me. Yeah.
My favorite one, I would be remiss not to mention the Lena Waithe Atlanta episode. I mean, that got her all her things, like got her the Emmy, was a beautiful and touching story about what it means to be, you know, a black gay woman and not, you know, being shelled away from your family and having to figure out, okay, well, how do I celebrate the holidays now? But so that's the answer if anybody asks.
It's very hard, you know, when you're black as opposed to when you're a white lesbian, then Ellen will just invite you on her show.
Ellen can just show up at any Thanksgiving dinner. She can dance her way for food. But I think my favorite episode that's just like saccharine and fun is the New Girl episode with Paul Long. And I love New Girl, and I love Zooey Deschanel, and I hate that about myself. I hate it so much. But the episode...
She's not a murderer.
She's not. But she's, like, probably the anti-me, I think. So for me to be obsessed with this woman and want to be her is not, like, my personality. But I love Zooey.
That's a good Aida puzzle piece, Zooey, though. I'll keep it in mind.
Yeah, it's something to figure out. But I love Paul Long. I can't stop smiling right now.
Honestly, all the actors on New Girl are very competent.
Yeah.
Routinely all very funny. And of course, Megan Fox, when she took over, also hilarious.
New Girl often did what it had to do. I only saw 3 seasons of it, but...
It was so funny.
Yeah. I did come back for the Megan Fox episodes.
That's when I stopped watching. Oh, wait. No, I didn't. I came back. I came back. I saw, what's his name? Smitty? Is that his name?
Yeah,
CBS
right.
Lot the other day, because I have Showcase there. He was on the phone. So
brag.
I know. I thought it was Zachary Quinto. I almost said hi, and then I was like, no, stop.
Oh, here's a question here I love. This is from Lauren. My question is, what pop culture do you take so personally that you feel attacked when you find out someone doesn't like it?
Boss Baby.
That is most of your brand on this show.
Boss Baby.
Yeah.
The baby is back, and he's a boss. That's the Boss Baby 2 tagline.
Is that it?
I don't know. There's not a Boss Baby 2.
You should write it. You're right. I think I would know there's a Boss Baby 2. You want to write that?
No.
Oh.
I'm good, love. Enjoy. You take that script assignment. I don't know. I try to be not one of those people, you know, because people should hate whatever they want to hate.
And it's not that serious. Whatever. Yeah. I like some things and other people don't like some.
I love discourse.
I don't want to kill Martin Scorsese and Alan Moore. You know,
right? And in fact, it's almost I like hearing criticism of things I love in a way. I like being forced to think of things I really enjoy in another way. That said, what do I get instinctively rabid and defensive about? I would say,
Gushers. If people don't like Gushers, we've got a problem.
Oh yeah.
Oh, this extends to food. This is just a cultural thing.
Yeah, Gushers and Butterfingers.
Well, we've already fought about.
Oh,
that.
Oh yeah, we have. The Butterfingers. Yeah. But I do enjoy them. I just don't like the physicality of them, like the way they get stuck in my teeth. But they taste amazing.
They just look like a, you know, like an eggplant emoji, if you know what I mean.
I sure don't. Like, are you blind? Okay, yeah.
I really like minimalism. Like, maybe not on me, but I love kind of cold environments and industrial looking places, and people can get very defensive. I think it's a divisive thing to like, maybe not.
Oh, that's an interesting answer.
You know, I mean, I'm just thinking that I really like minimalist everything. When I'm in a place that has a lot of things, I get very overwhelmed.
I guess my answer would be female-led dramas that I am obsessed with. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like I'm so grateful when, you know, we get a Carol or 45 Years or some of these other prestige movies that have come out in the past 2 years. 2 Days, One Night is another one that comes to mind. And when, I don't know, they're either treated as inessential or not somebody's taste, I'm like, no shit, it's not your taste. We do everything to get these fucking movies made and seen by anybody. So I can get a little defensive about that.
Well, Aida likes minimalism. Mm-hmm. You like female-led dramas. You both should go see an Ibsen play.
Oh, sure. Hedda Gabler, let's do it. Which, by the way, there was a version that starred Cate Blanchett that I think about constantly, and we'll never get to see that. Isn't that frustrating about theater? There's so much you will never get to see because they don't record it.
I saw After Miss Julie starring Sienna Miller. I wish I hadn't.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I hear she's sometimes good on stage.
Well, she wasn't then.
Okay.
Lewis, I'm going to pose this question for you.
Okay.
Lewis, the presidential candidates as Oscar Best Picture winners.
That is a very tough question.
I love that question, though.
Yeah. The one-for-one parallels will be very difficult. I mean, I think, I think Joe Biden would be Forrest Gump because he is a... generally speaking, a crowd pleaser, but upon further inspection, what were we thinking in certain ways? Okay. You know,
he seems like he would melt in your hands too.
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
Not in your mouth.
I think I would also add about Forrest Gump that we're more charmed by it than more edified by substance.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, Elizabeth Warren, I would have to be one that I'm fucking obsessed with.
It was like Spotlight or something, like Ooh. Something with a plan.
Oh yeah, and it's an investigation led.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. We'll just decide that she's Rachel McAdams in Spotlight.
Pete Buttigieg is definitely La La Land.
Oh, 100% hands down. A very good answer.
Due to whimsy.
Just due to whimsy, and you know, not really checking with black votes.
Oh, yeah. The discussions of jazz therein.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I've read about jazz.
Right. He could tell you about jazz.
Yeah.
But he doesn't live jazz.
Yeah.
I think Kamala is Green Book.
You think Kamala is?
I think so. Yeah, mm-hmm. I definitely think so. I think it's like, I see what you're trying to do for black people. I see what you're getting at. But I don't want to watch anymore.
Mm. Like Octavia Spencer will be on stage when you win.
Yeah.
But. Yeah. Maybe later she'll regret it. I don't know.
I do feel like Green Book called the cops on me.
Exactly. Kamala would make me sit in the back of her car while she yelled at me.
I was going to call Adrienne Yang Green Book.
Ooh.
But I feel like it's probably more... I'm going to preface this with, I like this movie.
Okay.
But Adrienne Yang is The Dark Knight.
Okay.
Which is not a Best Picture winner.
Was it a Best Picture nominee?
No.
Oh, that's right. That's why
they changed it to 10 nominations, right?
Well, you know what? I feel like it's still apt because you constantly have those fans arguing that it should have been nominated.
You know what? Brilliant answer, actually.
Is
really
Tulsi still running?
I mean, she's in her...
I think she is.
Her weird, erratic jog. Yes.
Tulsi?
Yeah, she's still running.
Yeah, she's the Descendants, just because it's set in Hawaii.
The Descendants.
Not a Best Picture winner.
It was only winners?
Yeah. Oh.
Well, damn it. I can't hear. I couldn't hear the question. I'm sorry, Two Cats, Too Curious, for getting your question wrong.
Is Bernie Sanders driving Miss Daisy just because? I feel like the humor levels are the same.
Oh, I'm a little curmudgeonly.
Mm.
Who's Shape of Water?
Oh, well, is anybody legitimately weird in this thing?
Marianne Williamson.
Marianne Williamson is Shape of Water.
Fish. Right, right.
She is.
She sees
she's
the beauty.
A girl. Yeah, she's
she sees the beauty in a sea creature with huge genitals. What's the deal with that movie? I don't know what happens. Oh, no, I've seen it.
I've seen the first half on a plane and chose not to look further.
Yeah, one time I was on a plane and everybody was watching that movie. It's a weird movie for everybody to be watching.
We were on that same plane, I think. I think we were coming back from...
Oh, South by Southwest or something? Yeah.
Uh-huh. And everyone was watching it. Yeah, I think that she would, you know... Helen Keller fucking an amphibian. That's The Shape of Water.
Right, right.
But less
That was the pitch.
But less of a racist than Helen Keller was.
Let's move right along. Let's see here.
Mark says, if you had to prepare a top 10 list for queer excellence, what would be on it? And can I vote for Niall DeMarco? I mean, I'm friends with him, but are you just voting for him because he's hot, Mark?
I mean, yeah, excellence is a specific word.
Specific.
And is he talking about all time?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, queer achievements.
Oh, do they have to be achievements in the queer world, or do they have to be achieving things while queer? Because
God,
that's a distinction to make.
This will be debated in the courts later, so yeah. You're right.
Yeah. Why not both?
Why not both? Okay.
I'm going to go with Oscar Wilde's The Importance of Being Earnest is my favorite queer thing. Why? Okay. It's hilarious to read. It's always shocking to me, like, when there are books like Pride and Prejudice where you read them and they feel like there are certain elements of them that are so contemporary in humor, which is so wild. But everybody in The Importance of Being Earnest is just a true bitch. All of the men act like little gay imps. The women are cutting. And so it's super eternal, and I feel eternally queer as well. So that's on my list. Harvey Milk's on it. What else is going on?
There's an essay by James Baldwin in the collection The Devil Finds Work about Joan Crawford, and I think that is just the height of queer excellence.
Queerity.
Yes.
Wow.
It was the first queerity post.
God, I got to read that. Is he obsessed with her or what?
Yeah, he's very intrigued by just her presence. I'll lend it to you.
Well, she invented the idea of, you know, shoulders that are just trapezoidally large.
Yes.
I'm going to offer up Audre Lorde if we're doing, you know, black literature people. I love her, and she... I sound like a toddler. She's my favorite. And yeah, I love Audre Lorde. I think I came into a lot of my like black identity reading her stuff. And she was one of the first openly lesbian poets, black poets that I had read. So I was like, what? This is amazing.
I would listen to a podcast from Audre Lorde, James Baldwin, and Oscar Wilde.
You would?
Yeah.
Oh, I believe we're conducting it right now.
the original Keep It.
Wait. Wow. The Last Black Unicorn was the book that she wrote. I think the one that I'm referring to. It's a good book.
Who else?
Jodie Foster. In and Out, though, I don't want to talk about her because I don't think she's done anything for queer people that I know of.
But yeah, besides interacting with Kristen Stewart in a compelling way in Panic Room.
I would say the movie In and Out.
Oh, what's sure. That? You would add that movie?
What's that?
Yeah.
Let's talk about humor that doesn't really hold up. The amount of Barbara Streisand jokes made at the expense of the Kevin Kline character.
Yes. I would just say Kevin Kline is queer excellence. And not because of In and Out, but because I would say the entire cast of Soap Dish is queer excellence.
Oh, sure. Oh, well, you know what I always think about Soap Dish? Is that nobody talks about that Whoopi Goldberg is hot in that movie.
Oh, she's kind of sexy.
Yeah.
I found
out
photos of her and I was like, oh, you're a babe. Remember when she dated Ted Danson?
Oh, sure. The year was, I'm going to say late 80s. Yeah.
Yeah. She was dancing in the moonlight.
Is that a reference to?
Just, you know, them having moonlight moments and his last name being
Cory
Danson.
Booker is Moonlight.
Oh, yeah.
How dare you?
Okay.
You're fired.
No one talks about Zeke from High School Musical, the boy who wanted to cook, but they made him play basketball instead.
Oh.
Probably queer excellence.
Yeah, I think so.
Almost definitely queer excellence.
And Ryan, Sharpay's brother.
Oh, yes. Yeah, but he wasn't out in the movie, was he?
No.
It was just implied.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say my friend Dave Holmes, whom whenever I read his recollections of Billboard charts or sensations of past decades, he later became an MTV VJ. But he's somebody who makes me think like, oh, wow, there's like another one of what I want to be out there. Mm-hmm. Like it's so if my ambition seems stunted, it's because Dave Holmes has already accomplished them.
Do you think Joe Marsh wanted to fuck women?
Oh, in Little Women?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she certainly has the drive of a kind of, I was going to say George Sand, but George Sand was straight. She just dressed like men.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
You just saw the new Little Women,
I just saw the new Little Women, and that's what I feel.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Saoirse was giving, you know, big lesbian energy.
Aida, here's a question for you from April. In your quest to catch up on older movies, what movie have you been surprised by, either that you loved or more or less than you thought you would? Are any of them things that are going on your favorites list?
The Shining was definitely one. Well, I had known that all of these movies were amazing movies. Of course, they're classics. But when I figured since I wasn't there for the zeitgeist, I probably wouldn't be into it. But now I've gone back and now I'm like on Reddit pages trying to figure out what the hell's going on in The Shining. And so that one's a really good one. I'm going back now and watching all the old Oscar winners. So that's why that's why I'm even versed at all in the question from earlier. But not Adam Sandler movies. I can tell you that. And I've been watching a lot of Adam Sandler movies just so I can understand jokes. But ugh, that reminds me the turkey song thing is going to come up pretty soon, I'm sure.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure. You know the turkey song by Adam Sandler?
Turkey song? No, I know the...
from SNL.
Oh, I know the Hanukkah song. Not the same thing?
Mm-mm.
Okay, anyway.
I think those were the. I think that The Shining is a big one for me. I'm going back and watching like The Usual Suspects and all the Ocean's 11 movies. All the, you know, just any heist movie I can watch. I'm just trying to get everything in. The Matrix. I can just rattle off movies for. I've been cooped up.
Oh, good. That's exciting. Also, watching Oscar Best Pictures is generally rewarding. Mm-hmm. I would say on average they hold up well.
They also represent a lot of what's going on in the culture at the time.
Oh, yeah. You can read a lot into literally any movie. As something as seemingly pedestrian-paced as Terms of Endearment has a lot of, you know, 80s-isms in it. And it's representative of how we told stories about white family tragedy and stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know what would be a flop? Gandhi.
No one talks about that movie anymore. Either.
Gandhi
and by the way, who's
abysmal.
That's true. And it beat E.T.
Yeah.
But it is starring Candace Bergen.
Yes.
Whom I adore.
It is also 9 hours.
Right.
I would say from that era, though, Amadeus is a great winner.
That's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm.
That we don't talk
pretty
about
timeless.
As much.
Yeah. I think if you asked most people what their favorite Best Picture winner of the 80s was, Amadeus would probably be the answer. I, of course, am an Ordinary People stan, but we've already been down that road before.
You know I love Ordinary People.
I know.
Yeah. It's the first thing we bonded over. I don't think that's true.
So there's a question from Dylan. Does Ira have a soap sauna, or I guess it'd be a soap sauna, a soap character that he feels is truly him? Can we also assign soap saunas to Lewis and Aida?
Sure.
Let's
yeah.
do it. So what's your soap sauna, your persona from a soap opera?
I would say that I always thought I was probably a Sammy Brady from Days of Our Lives.
Mm-hmm.
She was a scammer and troublemaker. But I honestly feel that I'm probably more Blair Kramer from One Life to Live. She just is a sort of southern vibe and sort of just glamorous and gets into dangerous marriages.
Mm.
Yeah. You don't know any of these people.
No.
Your identification with soap stars is, you know, frightening in a Nurse Betty way.
I'm actually very interested. When did you start watching soap operas? Like, when did that become a thing for you?
Mid-90s. Mid-90s. Because my family watched Young and the Restless. And so I would watch that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would get into Days of Our Lives a bit later in, like, middle school when I got into Passions, too.
Okay.
So
interesting.
My gateway drugs. I would say that Lewis is probably someone from Passions. I would say that.
Which is among the crazier soaps that has ever existed.
I would say maybe you're Gwen from Passions. She was just like a sort of severe blonde.
Okay, good. My two favorite words.
Yeah, and very angular.
Good.
Yeah. And I feel that's you.
Does she carry like a briefcase and slam it down on tables?
Sometimes she had a briefcase. She was dating her childhood love, Ethan, and then the maid's daughter tried to steal him away from her.
Oh, so she's also a wronged woman?
Yeah, she's a wronged woman, but then she sort of becomes evil. So
we all have a journey.
Yes, yes. And I would say...
Do me.
You give me a vibe of like... Well, your tweets are very Drusilla from Young and the Restless because she was wild.
Okay, I'll take that.
But sometimes in person, you see more Olivia from Young and the Restless, a more demure black woman.
I like that.
Yeah. I just want to say that my friends share Aida's tweets with me now more than ever. And like, they so love it. My friend Jordan tweeted, "She needs Jesus at me."
Yeah, people are constantly sending us your tweets.
Good. I'm glad that in all reality, though, I'm the exact opposite of my Twitter page. Like, that is clearly not me as a person.
The juxtaposition between the wildness of your Twitter and the
collectedness, sweet softness,
yeah,
the maturity.
But it's very thrilling. It's a thrilling juxtaposition.
Lauren says, if the three of you had to be casted in the reboot of a movie, what movie would it be?
Well, I think my acting would be pretty limited. I would either have to be a spitfire, you know, gay dude who cracks jokes all the time, or the other thing I think I could do, which is play a psycho, because I don't think that's that hard. I think we give a lot of credit to actors for playing psychotic people when I feel like those are impulses that come easily to an actor. So I would be in a reboot of Psycho because I think I just have that look in my eye, unfortunately.
I think you've been training to be Anthony Perkins.
Right. He is Anthony Perkins. I routinely call my time machine husband. He is the most gorgeous.
Would you do something as wild as American Psycho? Would you do a Christian Bale
type? No, because
type?
That's like hyper heterosexual,
okay.
To which I say no.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But don't you think we need gay representation in the American Psycho?
Yes. I just don't know that I'm the one to do it.
Speaking of soap dish, I think I could be multiple characters from that movie. I could be Whoopi.
I feel that way about you too. That's
I could
a
be
good
Whoopi,
answer.
But I could also probably do Terry Hatcher or
I was going to say
Rob Lowe in the movie.
I was going to say Carrie Fisher.
Sorry, Robert Downey Jr. Not
right,
Rob
right.
Lowe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Carrie Fisher, whose name is literally Betsy Faye Sharon in that movie. That's just three names, guys.
I could actually play every character in Soap Dish in a one-man reboot.
I would also be Miss Scarlet in a gay Clue reboot. I still insist that they do a drag version of Clue. That feels very obvious to me.
I could be Haley Mills / Christina Ricci in the other reboot in That Darn Cat.
Oh, sure. Co-starring Dougie
Fresh.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I love not knowing what you guys are talking about. That's my favorite.
That's
part.
Disney. You gotta I get love in on that.
That Darn Cat is on Disney Plus.
That Darn Cat. Good. Well, I had just got it. If I would pick one, I would love to do a really shoddy remake of Shark Tale, but it's me doing all the characters and really bad voices. Like, I've always wanted to see that. But I think probably I'd want to play. Again, I feel limited, and I'm typecasting myself. But I think I could only play like a abrasive, maybe femme gay character.
Mm.
So maybe Queen Latifah set it off. I could kind of, that's the opposite of what I said, but I could do something a little like rough and harsher. Just, you know.
I would certainly
Katie Holmes and Disturbing Behavior.
Writing that down.
She had queer femme energy weirdly in her movies.
You think so?
I think so. Go.
During that time, we had Anne Heche and everything. That's where all the queer femme energy went.
Yeah.
Jagged haircuts and...
why don't you start at a remake of Mr. Wrong?
What's that?
That's the Ellen DeGeneres,
movie.
What?
Where she was like romancing a man's.
She did. Really?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Was this before she came out?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, right. She was sort of a rising star at the time.
It is a dark time capsule. The poster alone. I think that's it for our mailbag. I hope you all had some fun. I hope you did not die from the malaria I put in the mailbag.
That's how mailbags work, and disease.
Yeah.
You can just throw a big bag of malaria in it.
That's what the pilgrims did. I think they were just riding around on the Oregon Trail, just throwing malaria at indigenous people.
Like smallpox blankets.
Did you just say the pilgrims were on the Oregon Trail?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you weren't a history major. Very good.
I was not.
And I just said smallpox, so I'm not sure about timelines at all.
Coming up next, one of our favorite actresses, Lizzie Caplan.
Keep It is brought to you by Hinge. Hinge is the dating app designed to be deleted.
If you're really good at it, that is. I've actually met several really good friends through Hinge. I've used it, I can't believe this, over a decade now. Woof, what a life I've had.
Well, you know what they've added within a decade of us being on Hinge is their new LGBTQIA+ prompts, which are designed to help queer daters better connect based on similarities, interests, and compatibility.
Hinge prompts helps you show off your full personality and connect with someone who appreciates you. Plus, these prompts were created in collaboration with GLAAD, so they are by the people, for the people. Some of the prompts are, the first time I knew I was gay was, I was literally in the act of being gay, like hooking up with somebody when I admitted it. Denial is strong and hard in the Catholic Midwest.
Mine was Tom Cruise's Vanity Fair cover, the shirtless one.
You just turned to an imaginary camera and said, I'm gay.
Yeah, or broke the fourth wall.
You're like Fleabag. Other prompts include, I feel proudest of who I am when, it feels affirming when others, blank, I connect to my community by, I wish I could tell the younger version of myself. I'm going to say, whenever I watch that in a Drag Race semifinal, when they're like, if I could talk to my younger self, I would say, I would be like, girl, get tighter clothes. I mean, what's going on with what you're wearing? You look like you're in the X Games. Other prompts include, my chosen family is the best at, and gender euphoria looks like. Download Hinge and show off your full self using their LGBTQIA plus prompts today. Then find someone worth deleting the app for.
Tillamook Chocolate Collection ice cream is a total chocolate game changer. We start with unbelievably creamy dark chocolate ice cream. Then we add different chocolate treats, like chocolate cookies, chocolate cake, or chocolate brownies to make four decadent chocolate flavors. Because sometimes the thing that pairs best with chocolate is more chocolate. Tillamook Chocolate Collection ice cream. Extraordinary dairy.
Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of blackness from NPR and how I live my life every day.
Oh, I'm glad to bear witness to it.
Each of NPR's black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of a struggle.
It sounds like you at Coachella. I'm already tuned in. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be black today, told from a unique black perspective, from Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations. There's no limit to the range of black stories, black truths.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as very nuanced and black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us.
Doesn't the black experience sound like a three-disc Prince album we never got? Someone check the vault, please. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Delighted to be joined by Lizzie Kaplan. Hello.
Hi.
Lizzie Kaplan, I had never run just through your inventory.
Yeah.
And I heard you were going to be on the show, and then I thought about it. I was like, okay, Mean Girls, Party Down. I was like, Bachelorette. Like, I kept thinking about it. I am very emotionally attached to your work. You are such a spectacular performer.
Thank you. That's really, really nice. I will take that early morning compliment.
Just a constant slayer. We always end up talking about Bachelorette on this show, which I think is one of the great underrated viperish comedies.
Amen. I love that movie. I just saw Kirsten this past weekend.
Oh,
and she's so good in that movie. And it was one of those special ones for sure. Like, making it was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Just also the sneer level on Kirsten Dunst.
She's
unparalleled.
The greatest. She's like the greatest. She is such an amazing actress and also an amazing girl. I'm happy to report.
I am thrilled to hear it.
Yes.
You know, I was thinking a lot about those early 2000s sort of films too. Just that period seemed to cast a lot of actors who were really fucking great and now are doing really interesting work. You know, like you and Mean Girls, you know, like Kirsten Gabrielle in Bring It On, you know? And it's just, that's why I think that our era of films I grew up with are probably the best teen ones.
I agree.
Yeah.
People will argue the 80s, but I feel like there's an argument to be made for this, too.
I think in the 80s, they were figuring it out. And then by the 90s and 2000s, I'd be like, okay, yeah, we got it. And these are the best ones. And I feel thirsty because the 2010s, like when I was a teenager, we didn't have good, really, really good movies. Mean Girls was the first movie that I watched that was PG-13, and Janice's character activated something in me. I went from like really nice kid to horrid teenager.
That's incredible.
So thank you for that.
You're so welcome.
Personality
Tell your mother
awakening.
You're welcome as well.
Plus, the films from that era still sort of hold up as far as themes, you know? You look back in an 80s John Hughes movie, you are going to get some racism, some casual, maybe someone was raped in this car.
Yep. Yeah, right. And a lot of boobs, like constant tits in your face from teenagers, which is strange. But yeah, I agree with that. And that kind of weirds me out because I don't see how any teenagers now could possibly identify with the Mean Girls version of high school. Like, there's, they had some kind of phone stuff, but barely any, no social media, and yet that's the movie that people talk to me about the most, that their daughters, who are now 12, love that movie. So yeah. I don't really get it.
You're somebody who, when I watch you on screen, I feel like I'm getting to know you and that there's a sense of, like, hard sarcasm a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of casual intelligence. But then I also think about it, I realize you are secretly very varied. Like, when I watch Masters of Sex, that's not the same kind of character at all.
No.
So when you grew up, did you think I will be playing lots of funny roles, or did you always have a vision for the Masters of Sex type role?
When I first started, I wanted to be a straight-up dramatic actress.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. But I was 15. So, and yeah, I thought I'd be doing Shakespeare, and that would be my whole jam. And then I started getting these comedic roles for many, many years, and then I only identified as that. And then Masters of Sex came along, and it was like, no, I need to figure out if I can do something else other than the sarcastic, comedic one. And, yeah, miraculously I got that job. That was like a full-blown miracle. And now I get to kind of do different stuff, which is that's always been the dream.
That's so interesting, too, because I feel like we first really got to know you outside of Freaks and Geeks, which was shamefully short-lived.
Classic.
Really through, like, Party Down, which is, we've had Adam on the show,
and he
talked about how he started out really wanting to do dramatic acting,
yes,
too, and then you both just end up on this comedy.
I know. Yeah, he really did want to be, I think, growing up. At that point, he may have already been in the comedy world, but yeah, he, like, fancied himself a dramatic actor. It's so funny. It's so weird thinking about that now. But yeah, we're doing a reunion for Party Down this weekend? Sunday.
Yeah.
Sunday?
Sunday.
Yes.
Yes. How much is Party Down a part of what people remember you for? Because I feel like you, like Adam Scott, have like such a varied career and so many things where people can remember you from. And it's just now that you've both done so many other things, it doesn't immediately come to my mind. But I remember I ran into Adam at Vampire Weekend and the security,
that's about right,
and the security
exactly,
guard.
That tracks. Yeah.
The security guard there, like this older black man in his 60s, said, "Are we having fun yet?" And I was like, "He saw that show."
That is amazing. And yes, Party Down, when it was on, it we had no viewers. Like, nobody watched it. It was starting to get some critical attention, but for the most part, it was like invisible. And when people come up to us now, or me come and mention Party Down, it is like a weird little shorthand, like, I know the underground comedy shit. Yeah. I actually like those people the most, the ones who have watched Party Down, because it still feels like it's yours, I think, as a viewer, because it was so under the radar. Like, it was not even, like, people had no idea it existed. So anybody who likes Party Down is like, oh, okay, I gotcha. I know what you're saying. None of that mainstream shit.
Now, so if people don't know, you are playing Annie Wilkes, a character made very famous in the movie Misery by Kathy Bates. You're on a show called Castle Rock. Are you the kind of person who would have seen a movie like Misery 100,000 times? Or are you like now like begrudgingly like, oh, I'll see if it was good?
Yeah. I've been both of those people. But for this, I was well-versed in Misery.
Yeah.
I love Misery. I don't think I would have tried to do this, or I don't even know if Castle Rock would have been on my radar if not, honestly, my husband is like a huge horror guy, and I wasn't at all before we met, and he has turned me into this like horror fiend. So we watched the first season of Castle Rock. That's the only reason why I even kind of knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I would have had the balls to try to do an Annie Wilkes if I didn't have a spot in my heart already for Annie Wilkes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe it would have been less terrifying and daunting, but I don't think I personally would have done it. I would have let somebody else who was obsessed with that role.
I kind of like that a lot, too. It's always interesting when you get an actor who sort of doesn't want to look at the original performance. And I know so many who do that, you know. But I think that if you're building on something that's so much in pop culture, it makes sense to sort of look at what it was or have been a fan of it, so you bring something
I am inclined to agree with that in specific circumstances, mm-hmm. like this definitely being one of them. But the expectation is create your own thing. Mm-hmm. Don't steal from anybody else. Mm-hmm. And so I think we all kind of, or I go into it thinking that, but for this, I didn't. I don't even, it was like halfway through shooting the season that I was like, oh no, I should have done something completely different. Everybody's going to hate this. Oh God, oh God. I had like full-blown panic attacks every single night for the first 4 months of shooting Castle Rock.
A friend of ours, Shea Serrano, wrote a book and they're about movies, and there are essays from various friends, colleagues of his in it. And one of them, this guy Wesley Morris, wrote about how Annie Wilkes, it's a character that sticks with him because he says that she obviously turns into, she is a horrifying character, but also there's a quality about her where she might have been your English teacher. Mm-hmm. She might, like, there's an actual humanity there that in fact goes not spoken of in retrospect. Like, we don't talk about it that much, and why it's an Oscar winning role.
Totally.
You know? So what are your favorite parts of this character?
I think it's that. I mean, that kind of hits the nail on the head. She is a villain. She is a murderer. She does a lot of objectively bad stuff, but she's also very multifaceted. She is kind. She is loving. She has this really tender bedside manner. And I think that makes her infinitely more terrifying.
Yes, right.
Because it can come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And in our show, you know, in Misery, in the book and the film, she's very isolated. She's living like on a house on a mountain somewhere. And our story is not that. Our story is an Annie Wilkes out in the world. She's got this daughter that's like her driving force, and you get to see like a really soft side of her, which I do think you have flashes of in the movie and in the book, but this is like a whole different version of Annie. This is like before she has isolated herself.
Does this make you want to watch more horror? So you're not into it at all?
No, I am now.
Oh, you
I'm
are?
I'm obsessed
got it.
With it now. It's like all we watch now.
What have you mainlined? What have you gotten into?
Right now we're watching this show, Marianne, on Netflix. It's like a French horror thing. It's so scary. It's so good. I highly, highly recommend it. I just saw Parasite this weekend.
Oh, hell yeah.
Parasite is fucking amazing.
It's really
amazing. Yes.
It's amazing. It's so fun and scary and gross and all the things you want.
And absolutely don't know anything about it before you go in.
Yeah,
because it engrosses you immediately. Like, you're into it.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Noted.
Yeah. There's some good Korean horror movies that they do, like, really cool.
They seem to have a handle on this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's, like, all different, you know, Parasite, without giving anything away, it, like, bounces between tones throughout the whole thing, and you're like on board the whole time. It's really fun.
It really
well
is at some points like a screwball comedy.
It's
like a Cary Grant movie from the 40s or something at some point.
It's so impressive. It's really good. So watch those.
Tell us what your takeaway is from, by the way, Masters of Sex. When I think about that show, first of all, the scene I have seen most, I think, is the one where Allison Janney talks about having sex and like it not feeling. Anyway, it's a very bracing scene. That show had a lot of bracing scenes.
Yeah.
So talk about preparing for a day on the set of that show.
It got easier as it went on over the years, but that was the thing I kind of loved the most about that show. We had all these incredible actors coming on, whether they were doing one episode or a season or beyond, and you were just there to like act your face off and like give it. I mean, Allison Janney's like the perfect example. She's so heartbreaking and wonderful in everything, but in Masters of Sex, I'm biased. So, it was difficult, obviously. For me, I was coming in very scared of doing anything really dramatic. I had never done any period pieces before.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so all of that, and then playing opposite, like, such a well-respected dramatic actor. So that was on my brain a lot. And then you sprinkle it with, like, super graphic sex scenes and lots of nudity. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely scary at the beginning and probably the first half of the first season. And then it's just like any other job. Like, I worked my ass off on that job. We all did. But it became easier to slip into that whole thing as the years went on.
Well, so here's a question, too. You know, Masters of Sex does have, I mean, it's in the title, sex, you know? And it is a show where you have to really sort of depict a lot of graphic scenes. How is that like as an actor, you know, especially that's been in the conversation so much because of David Simon having a talk about The Deuce, you know, and like actors and everything, you know, it's like as an actor, knowing especially the climate we're in now, how do you approach doing these scenes? How do you want directors or writers to approach you about these scenes?
Yeah, it's so funny because we, Masters of Sex, we shot that whole thing pre-Me Too. So it would have been a very different set, for sure. We had some little scene in Castle Rock. I wasn't in it, two other actors, and you don't see anything. They're not, you know, having sex. They're not even making out. They're just, like, in bed post-coital. And they had an intimacy coordinator on set to, I guess, walk them through, like, placement of the blankets. So I do feel like, and I was talking to Yusra, who's the actress who was in the scene, I've talked to a few people where it feels like such a massive overcorrection at this point, but it's definitely necessary. I think it would have, we were like adamant on the Masters of Sex set that everybody feel like ridiculously comfortable. You were well taken care of. But there are plenty of other sets where people aren't taking that care. So this overcorrection, I get why it's happening, and I think it's really, really important because if you're first starting out and you're on a set that requires nudity, you don't want to rock the boat, like kind of period. And so you'll just like, oh, I don't need that privacy thing. Oh, I don't, no, I don't need a robe. I'm fine. Because you don't want to be like perceived as difficult or tricky in any way. And then kind of really uncomfortable, horrible stuff can happen. And I'm not talking about like full Weinstein stuff, but just being naked on a set with a bunch of strangers and not feeling protected. So those days are over, which I think is a really good thing. But for our show, we sort of had to set that tone ourselves, which we did. We were happy to do it, of course.
I want to ask you about, we were talking about this actually in our Halloween episode, some of our favorite horror films. And the acting in horror is very nuanced in the way that, like, you have this motive, but also there's an ulterior motive because you're advancing a plot in a sort of way. So I want to know, like, how many parts of Lizzie Caplan come through in Annie?
I hope not very many.
Yeah, that's a funny thing.
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, I know I would come home and still be kind of talking in her voice sometimes. My husband was a little freaked out by that. But this wasn't one. There have been roles, Virginia Johnson on Masters of Sex being one of them, that I would take it with me. I was always, she was always on my mind. When I left work, on the way to work, it was just all consuming. This was not that. This was happening when I'm at work and then totally not out of work. Like, I wasn't driving around in my car thinking, like, what would Annie be thinking right now? Like, I just, I left it there. And I think I kind of had to because it's so bonkers and, like, so high energy and, like, at a state of, like, this high-pitched panic all the time that I needed to chill out. So I don't think that there's much of me in Annie. But I hope now there's some Annie in me.
But would people be surprised if they watched your old movies how little of you was actually in a part at any given time?
Maybe some of them. I'd have to, like, comb through the old IMDb. But I think for the most part, no, there was a lot of me
in
a lot of those characters.
What would you say is the most unexpected upshot of the legacy of Mean Girls? Like, obviously people come up to you, but how is it a part of your life in a way that is, I'll say, surprising?
Well, I'm not on social media, so I don't get the onslaught. Like, I'm sure all the other people in that movie get it daily, just some kind of Mean Girls shout out or reference. I'm pretty separate from that. So when people come up to me and say that it means something to their daughters, that's really cool and surprising because of what I said before, just like the fact that it stood whatever test of time. But it's the people that come up to me and tell me, you know, I was really in a bad way in high school and I watched that movie and it made me feel less alone and invisible and I saw myself in your character. And, you know, these are like emotional conversations that happen on the street, and it's incredible. That's the most surprising, best part, because that's not why I was doing the movie.
Yeah,
I was
doing
the movie to further my own career.
So have you seen the Mean Girls on Broadway?
Yes.
Do you like it?
I do.
How do you feel?
I do. It was really, really crazy to see that. It brought up like all kinds of nice feelings that I wasn't anticipating. I rewatched the movie right before I saw the play because I hadn't seen the film since, I guess, since it came out. And so seeing that again was really weird. And then seeing this show, which is like, I loved it. I thought it was like super, super joyful and great and impressive and all of the things. And then knowing that these kids who were playing these roles, they were really little when we made the movie and they grew up watching the movie. And so that made me feel, you know, a little old, but also a little happy. Yeah.
Now you've done comedy, you've done the drama, we're doing horror. Is there anything else that you really, really want to do that you haven't gotten the opportunity to yet?
Yeah, I feel like everything. I feel like I haven't done anything yet. So everything. It never ends.
Yeah, I guess a war drama would be next.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I did do a mini series of Das Boot, so
oh, that's
check never, that out.
Never mind.
Okay, what
Das
else
Boot
you
is
got?
Like the drama.
No, definitely. You guys should watch Das Boot. I should watch Das Boot. Apparently, it's very good. Yeah, I think just the lily pad hopping between stuff. I want to keep doing that. And I love Castle Rock. I'm super, super proud of it. But I want to do even more horror things that are kind of in the, like, where you leave little social messages embedded in this fun horror movie. Mm. That, to me, is the most exciting version of horror. Like the what Jordan Peele's doing and a bunch of other people at this point, even Parasite a bit. Mm-hmm. Like, you can wedge your issues, like the issues you want to speak about, into a horror movie, mm-hmm. and you can sneak that message into people's brains. And I think it's one of the few genres that you can do that with.
You also have distinctive final girl energy. Like,
oh,
I would be, clutching onto your journey. I'm like, yes, she is me. Yeah.
Bad idea. Not a bad idea.
Don't trust that.
Oh, there is another horror movie that I watched. It was this week. It was the first one I've ever had to turn off. So if you really want the scariest movie ever, 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 it's called Threads. It's a 1980s British horror movie, and it's like a fake documentary about them dropping the bomb.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
It is so scary. It is so, so scary.
She actually, Lizzie kind of looks like she's about to cry.
I don't ever want to, like, I had to turn
shook.
It off before. It will shake you. You okay. have no idea. You will leave shook if you can get to the end of it.
I will be watching Threads.
Yes.
Lizzie, thank you so much for being
Thanks,
here.
Thanks, guys.
And Castle Rock is on Hulu now.
Yes, it is.
People can catch it. Check it out.
Yeah, it. Mm-hmm. I got what you're doing.
Imagine bold, naturally aged Tillamook cheddar slices melting over a burger, eating handfuls of thick-cut cheddar shreds straight from the bag, taking a bite out of an irresistibly bold block of extra sharp cheddar cheese. We know you want to get back to streaming, but wasn't it nice to daydream about cheese for a bit? Tillamook Cheddar. Extraordinary dairy.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. It is Keep It, a holiday themed Keep It. Mm. Maybe if you have a Thanksgiving-esque Keep It.
Sure. My thanks go to myself for not being you, because my Keep It is to Ira for getting in Deadline.com this week and making my ass jealous.
Oh.
Congrats.
Thank you. I wasn't even going to bring it up on the show.
We peeped.
Yes, no, I unfortunately saw the internet this week, so I was made privy of the situation. Tell me about this show. It's called Canceled.
I'm writing a show with my friend Julian Brees for Greg Berlanti, Warner Brothers TV, the lovely Sarah Schechter, and Kevin Donahue are producers on it. And it's about four friends who take down problematic celebrities.
You ready for a trivia challenge? Can you name five Greg Berlanti shows right now? Go.
Everyone, Brothers and Sisters, and also, this is very easy because I could just say The Flash, Supergirl, Arrow, Titans, People of Tomorrow.
Which one am I thinking of? I'll give you a hint. It ran on NBC and had a female lead.
The Mysteries of Laura?
It is, yes.
Sorry, Legends of Tomorrow, not People of Tomorrow.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Anyway, Deborah Messing running around. She has a kid, but she also has a gun.
Yes. No, I mean, Greg Berlanti has a long string of
He wrote
TV
Broken
shows.
Hearts Club, the seminal gay movie from the turn of the century.
Yeah. You know, do you remember Political Animals?
Yes, with Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah. So.
Who remains very tall.
Very good shows. Dirty Sexy Money, Jack and Bobby.
Ooh, Dirty Sexy Money. That was a different Baldwin. William Baldwin?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And
not William Baldwin,
no,
the other one.
No, it was
that upsets
no,
me.
No, it was William Baldwin.
Oh, good. Good for me.
William Baldwin. No Ordinary Family.
Julie Benz.
Yes. That
Michael Chiklis. Yeah.
That superhero TV show about a family.
It turns out no one is more accomplished than Greg Berlanti. And he has a wonderful husband who I one time saw in an emerald green suit. He's that soccer player, Robbie Rogers.
Last very underrated one. You remember Eli Stone starring Johnny Lee Miller?
No.
About the singing lawyer.
Remember when it took us until elementary to realize we love him? I do love Johnny Lee Miller.
Yeah. Anyway.
So congrats to you, and also keep it. Fuck you.
Thank you. What's your keep it, Aida?
My keep it is to being obligated to go to Friendsgiving parties and Thanksgiving parties and bringing food. You know, this is a very hedonist thing I'm about to say. I want to show up to your event and eat your food and leave. You're going to have extras anyway. Why should I bring something? And I promise you, if I bring something, it will be torture. It will be not good food. It will be pie you don't want to eat. Half of y'all are vegans. I don't know how to cook for vegans. So just let me come with a bag of chips.
This is the tackiest keep it I have ever
Can I tell you something?
Let me just show up.
You know what? Actually, I think if you can't cook, just bring... Bring some liquor.
I'll bring liquor.
Okay, that's fine.
But I've been to parties where people are insistent. They're like, just cook something. Like, learn. Figure it out. No.
Oh, well, that's rude.
No.
I don't want to learn. And it's often white people who say that.
Exactly.
Just learn how to cook.
Also, there are certain ways in which we all contribute. Do you know what you're bringing to the feast? Wit.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Feast on that.
I'm here to chime. Yes. Eat up these jokes. Well, I also think that, because the way I cook, I come from an African household, so I don't know how to make turkey, stuffing, cranberry, anything is disgusting to me. The fact that goes on meat, but because people have been conditioned to eat their meat with cranberry sauce, that is just a Thanksgiving thing.
Right.
I like to eat my meat while listening to the cranberries.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. Dolores O'Riordan, R.I.P. But no, you're right. Cranberries are the ketchup of Thanksgiving. It's just not that cute.
I think they're gross. I actually think pumpkin pie is gross. I think that... But
cranberries you know what I prefer? I prefer cranberry sauce in a can.
I think that's a somewhat popular opinion, actually.
Yeah, when you're making mashing the actual cranberries, I don't want that. I want that processed gelatin.
Like gelatinous, it holds the shape of the can, and then it's presented like it's still in a can. It's disgusting.
Do you know what I would also compare this
to? Bill Cosby promoted it, okay? So, like,
did he really?
All Jell-O's good. I just believe
that.
Oh, yeah.
I would consider it's like when you have a karaoke outing with your friends, and then there's somebody who's like, oh, everybody has to get up there. Everybody has to think. It's like, no, you don't want to hear me do this. It will hurt you. I can't do it. Just enjoy my presence here. I swear I'm bringing something. Energy, whatever. You know, the spirit of an ancient gay person from 19th century England, whatever I am.
I think I would love to see you hit the karaoke stage doing a little less conversation.
The original Elvis version or the Junkie XL remix?
Maybe whichever version was done every week on American Idol.
Oh, right. Including one by our good friend Jackie Tone.
Yes.
Now that you mention it. I would not do that. I can, as somebody who is incapable of using my voice in any other way than the way you're hearing it right now, I can only do lady rap because I don't identify with male rap. Or maybe bare naked ladies 1 week.
Okay.
Because that's a lot of talking quickly. It was the first podcast, actually, that song.
What's your keep it?
My keep it is to a restaurant franchise. It is Thanksgiving week. I'm thinking about soups. The soups are great. It's, you know, I'm feeling cozy. But you know where I will never eat soup
Don't
from?
Don't say what I think you're about
soup
to say.
Soup Plantation.
No, why is that?
What the
why?
Fuck does it still have that name?
Because it has soup in it. Why would they say
Plantation? Why does it still have the name?
Also, by the way, what's with it being one word?
Yes.
What novelty value do we get from not separating the words soup and plantation?
Because then it would highlight plantation.
True. Oh, I guess that's true.
Yeah. What's the conceit? What's the conceit? Like, is it...
Well, it's supposed to be like a soup emporium.
Okay.
But you know what the secret is? They only have like 8 fucking soups.
That's fucking
are they all
you
also...
go there and Soup Plantation is mostly a huge ass salad bar.
Are they also kind of racially offensive soup names? Like, is the minestrone like minstrel soup?
Oh, yes.
And it's like chowda.
Minstrelstrone.
Chowda soup. Minstrel.
Massa said tomato. I don't know. I feel like every employee at Soup Plantation is always trying to go to freedom.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm never eating there.
Uh-huh.
Good.
And change the name. Soup Plantation. And don't take this as free promo. Don't send us
free
any
soup.
Free soup.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
I won't eat it.
Also, by the way, again, as one word, I'm just thinking about, is there a correct way to pronounce it as one word? Like, supplantation. It's just too much syllabically.
Well, that sounds like the word supplantation. Supplantation.
Yeah.
Supplant?
Right. I want there to be a pun in there, but I bet there's nothing.
Not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will not support any of their soupy sales.
Oh, I love Soupy Sales as a comic. Thank you for bringing him up.
Yeah, I just really wanted that double entendre that was only for you because it's a white man who died in the early part of the century.
Ira, what's your rename for it? Soup what? Actually, maybe don't give this to them. They'll take it.
Tawny Newsome, our friend who also co-hosts That's So Racist and has been a guest co-host on this show, tweeted that they should name it Soup to Shining Soup.
Oh, that's cute.
Soup to Shining Soup.
How elegant. How debonair.
Soup to Shining Soup. I hate that, but I love it.
Soup by Soup.
What is that?
I don't know. Just... You know, like Mark by Mark Jacobs.
I would rather take like soup or soups than fucking whatever you just said.
Well, what if they just called it soup?
That's fine. It's what it is. Yeah.
With an exclamation point.
Mm-hmm.
Soup.
But underlined.
But then they'd have to get more than 8 fucking soups.
That's right. The onus would be on them to actually live up to the name.
You know what soup store I really miss since we live on this coast now? Fucking Hale and Hearty Soups.
Oh, right, right, right.
That was doing what the other soup girls weren't doing.
Okay.
Yeah. Those soups were Hale, and they were so hearty.
Now I want soup.
Yeah.
Yeah. A carrot ginger.
Mm, yeah.
Or soup. Soup Plantation's carrot nigga.
Well. That's our show. We'll see you next week. Thanks, Lizzie Kaplan. Keep It is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Rustin is our producer. It's Caroline, like the princess, the one you don't care about. Our editor is Bill Lance, and Kyle Seguin is our sound engineer. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadine Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night, no matter how chaotic your day is. Conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute. And craft the perfect Sunday brunch when it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.